Welcome again to the MJA podcast. My guest this morning is Dr. Michael Potter, who's a conjoint fellow at the University of Newcastle and an advanced trainee in gastroenterology at John Hunter Hospital. Hello, Michael. Thank you for your time.
Okay, thanks for having me.
You've co-written a narrative review for us on non-celiac gluten or wheat sensitivity. What is that?
This condition, non-celiac gluten or wheat sensitivity, is a clinical entity which is induced by the ingestion of gluten or wheat-based food, and it leads to gastrointestinal or extra-intestinal symptoms that resolve once the gluten or the wheat has been eliminated from the diet and then recurs when it's reintroduced.
So what's the difference between it and celiac disease?
I guess there are a few differences. First of all, some of the things that we look at in celiac disease don't seem to be involved in non-celiac wheat sensitivity. So one of them is genotype. So the HLA status in celiac disease, where almost all patients have a permissive HLA genotype, usually DQ2.2, 2.5 or DQ8. Almost all celiac patients have it, but the prevalence in non-celiac wheat sensitivity is pretty much the same as in the general population.
Okay.
The antibodies we use to screen and diagnose celiac disease, such as tissue transglutaminase antibodies, they're also not seen in non-celiac gluten or wheat sensitivity. And if they're present, it suggests that the condition is celiac disease rather than non-celiac wheat sensitivity. And whilst duodenal inflammation is sometimes seen in non-celiac wheat sensitivity, the enteropathy that characterises celiac disease is not seen in non-celiac gluten sensitivity.
So if I'm a GP and a patient walks in with all those presentations that suggest celiac disease, what should I do to determine whether it's celiac disease or non-celiac gluten or wheat sensitivity?
Like celiac disease, it's a great mimic, and a large number of symptoms have been linked with non-celiac gluten sensitivity, including gastrointestinal symptoms like abdominal pain, bloating, diarrhea, as well as extra-intestinal symptoms like headache or tiredness or muscle aches or even just a lack of well-being. So I guess having it in the back of your mind. But then in terms of making a formal diagnosis, it's currently quite a difficult thing to do. The diagnostic process is according to a consensus criteria called the Salerno consensus criteria, which was developed in 2015.
Yeah.
And there are a couple of parts to it. First of all, other gastrointestinal diseases need to be excluded, in particular celiac disease and wheat allergy, as well as other things like inflammatory bowel disease, et cetera. But as there's no biomarker for non-celiac wheat sensitivity, the formal diagnosis can only be made by performing a double-blind, randomised, placebo-controlled dietary challenge,
wow,
which often isn't feasible or practicable in a clinical setting.
So if it's not a practical way of finding out, why not just cut out gluten and move on?
So that's a good question. I guess the gluten-free diet has several drawbacks, but for patients with celiac disease, we know that it not only alleviates their symptoms, but it prevents the longer-term adverse health effects of the disease.
Right.
Although there are a few studies that have shown high rates of anemia and lower bone mineral density in patients with non-celiac wheat sensitivity, there's currently not enough evidence for us to say that the condition is associated with the same long-term adverse outcomes like malabsorption or osteoporosis or malignancy risk that we see in celiac disease. So recommending a gluten-free diet to patients with non-celiac gluten or wheat sensitivity is for symptom relief only. Also, patients with celiac disease are advised to consume a strictly gluten-free diet, as even small amounts of gluten can cause the disease to relapse. Currently, we don't know whether gluten minimisation as opposed to total exclusion is useful in these patients who we think have non-celiac gluten or wheat sensitivity.
And a gluten-free diet, a totally gluten-free diet, is not necessarily a great thing over a long term, is it? There are some adverse effects.
There are quite a few drawbacks from a gluten-free diet. I mean, gluten-free food items are more costly than their gluten-containing equivalents.
Yep.
It's more inconvenient for patients to adhere to a gluten-free diet, for instance, if they're going out to dinner. There's also increasing evidence that suggests the gluten-free diet is associated with adverse health effects, including things like micronutrient deficiencies, weight gain, changes in other cardiovascular risk factors such as lipids or blood pressure, and even exposure to higher rates of trace metals like arsenic. And a gluten-free diet has also been shown to influence the intestinal microbiome, which is increasingly being implicated in a range of diseases, although in regards to a gluten-free diet, we're not sure whether these changes are good or bad.
We have trouble diagnosing it as differentiated from celiac disease. The treatment's gold standard, but it's also not great over a long term. And do we know the pathogenesis of non-celiac gluten or wheat sensitivity?
And look, this is also quite poorly understood. Unlike celiac disease, where the adaptive immune system is clearly implicated, it seems that the innate immune system is involved in non-celiac gluten sensitivity. That observes things like increased intestinal permeability, epithelial cell damage, increased expression of toll-like receptors,
right,
which are hallmarks of the innate immune system, and things like increased intestinal eosinophilia. So there's a signal that the innate immune system is involved, but further to that, we're
in the dark.
That's right.
So where does research need to focus? Is it on treatment or is it on understanding the absolute root causes of this?
Look, there's lots of avenues for research. It's such a new condition that the literature is only 5 or 10 years old at most. I think the current main issue is the method for diagnosis. Dietary trial, which involves patients to go on a gluten-free diet for a month and then have a blinded re-challenge with gluten and then a placebo over a period of another month or so, is very cumbersome, and it's unlikely to be useful in a clinical setting. I think once more research is done and we know more about the pathogenesis, it'll hopefully lead to the uncovering of a biomarker which will facilitate the diagnosis, and that will mean patients don't have to be put through this long, cumbersome process and allow clinicians to more easily identify the patients who are going to benefit from a gluten-free diet. And it seems to affect a huge number of people. I mean, in the community, there's some studies have shown maybe between 4 and 13% of people themselves associate gluten with adverse health effects. And while a lot of them will be excluded if you put them through the formal diagnostic process, there's still likely to be a large number of people who are truly affected.
Yeah, I mean, it must be an exciting field to work in right now.
Oh, absolutely. It's a very open field and there are so many unanswered questions. So it's very exciting.
Thanks, Michael. I really appreciate your time.
Thanks very much, Kate. I appreciate the opportunity.